Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program 635, titled Going Native, Part 4. This program is being recorded on May 26th of the year 2008. And before I begin the main part of the program, let me give a heart and soul felt thank you to all of our men and women who have served in foreign wars, I guess also the Civil War. Today is Memorial Day, and a tip of the hat to our men and women in uniform, past and present. And what can I say? My life's work is dedicated to attempting to fulfill, or at least preserve, what many of you fought and died for. So, thanks again. This program, again, is titled Going Native, Part 4, and what we're going to be examining in this broadcast is an element of underground Reich foreign policy, which in turn represents a continuation of Third Reich foreign policy, and we're going to be taking a look at the manifestations of what the Germans call Volksgruppenrechte, or the rights of native peoples. That's spelled Volksgruppenrechte. I pronounce it Volksgruppenrechte. That may be incorrect. What we're going to be doing in this program is beginning by taking a look at the continuation by the contemporary government of the Federal Republic of Germany of the pan-German European agitprop, which preceded and in many ways precipitated the German aggression of World War II. We're going to be taking a look at the Federal Republic of Germany's championing of the, quote, rights, unquote, of German minorities in parts of Eastern Europe. And specifically, we're going to be taking a look at their attempts at returning some of the German minorities to some of those European countries from which they were expelled at the end of World War II, precisely because of the agitation that many of them engaged in on behalf of the Third Reich, and more importantly, the aggression of the Third Reich was in many ways predicated upon the alleged oppression of these Germanic minorities. We're going to take a look at how the German minorities in elements of in places in Eastern Europe have been termed the threatened peoples, and efforts on behalf of the Federal Republic and organizations sponsored by it to advance the causes of these threatened peoples. Then we're going to dolly back and we're going to take a look at Volksgruppenrechte as it is being applied elsewhere around the world. Much of the program is going to focus on the destabilization of China, which I believe is well underway, and we're going to be taking a look at the championing by these same German and underground Reich elements, including and especially underground Reich elements within the U.S. government, the Bush administration in particular. And we're going to be taking a look at how they are championing the rights of Tibetans and agitating inside of China, and how they are agitating on behalf of the Uyghur Muslim minority in Xinjiang province. I know I'm mispronouncing that. Those of you out there who speak Chinese, forgive me, I don't. If somebody can give me a simplified pronunciation of that, someone who speaks Chinese, I'll incorporate it into the broadcasts. But don't shoot the piano player. He's doing the best he can. We're going to be taking a look, too, at the UNPO, the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples Organization, that wonderful-sounding, multicultural-seeming organization, which, in fact, is using the rights of native peoples around the world, including many peoples who have been thoroughly screwed, such as the native Hawaiians and the Lakota in the United States, but not using them to further their interests so much as to use them as a lever, kind of a jackhammer to split apart larger states targeted for destabilization and subjugation by the underground Reich and its corresponding elements within the Federal Republic of Germany, and also the fifth column elements inside of the United States, elements within the Bush administration and the GOP in particular. And that is what we have on tap. We're going to begin by taking a look at the Premier of Bavaria, the Prime Minister of Bavaria, speaking on behalf of the Sudeten Germans. Now, it was the Sudeten Germans who were the pretext for, first, the annexation by Adolf Hitler of the Sudetenland, and later, the annexation of Czechoslovakia as a whole. As you listen to the discussion about these various displaced German minorities from Eastern Europe, they were displaced, unquote, at the end of World War II precisely because they represented fifth column elements, and they were the pretext for German aggression in much of Eastern Europe, including Czechoslovakia, where the Sudeten Germans were the flavor du jour, so to speak, and also in Poland, where the Volksdeutsche, the Polish citizens of German extraction, were the pretext for the devastating invasion and occupation of Poland. And we're going to begin with an article that comes from Deutsche Welle. That is actually the German broadcasting service, closely allied, by the way, with the German intelligence service, the BND. And that, of course, is the final incarnation of the Gehlen organization, Hitler's Eastern Front Intelligence Organization, which first became the CIA's Department of Russian and Eastern European Affairs, and then overlapping that tenure became the NATO Intelligence Organization, and ultimately the BND, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, the West German and now German Intelligence Service. On November 5th of 2008, on May 11th of 2008, Deutsche Welle had the following to say. This is titled, Bavarian Premier Calls for Dialogue on Sudeten German Issue. Bavarian Prime Minister Gunter Beckstein called Sunday for a dialogue with the Czech government to resolve outstanding issues related to the expulsion of ethnic Germans from Czechoslovakia at the end of World War II. For this to happen, quote, Prague had to face up to the chapter of history relating to the expulsions, unquote, he said at a rally of the Sudeten German Association in the Bavarian city of Nuremberg. Before we continue with this, let me remind listeners that the various German minorities expelled from Eastern Europe were championed inside of the Federal Republic by what became known as the Bundesamt für Vertriebene. The Vertriebene groups were the various organizations formed under the auspices of and the command of the SS that championed the rights of the Sudeten Germans, the Volksdeutsche, and the others. And they were presided over by a ministry of the German government, basically an SS ministry of the German government. So the Vertriebene groups, again, basically an offshoot of a derivative of the SS, are the main organization that has served as the foundation and cement for the activism of these various German minorities that were expelled from Europe at the end of, and expelled from Eastern Europe into Germany at the end of World War II. They, by the way, are inextricably linked with the Gehlen organization and were a major element not only of CIA covert operation courtesy of the Gehlen org in the post-World War II period, but they also became a key element of the GOP's ethnic outreach program. They participated not only in covert operations outside of the United States, but also they participated in a number of things inside of the U.S., including the assassination of President Kennedy and the Reagan and Bush administrations extending forward, courtesy of Citizen von Bolschwing and Citizen von Damme. More about that later. Returning again to this Deutsche Welle article from May 11th, Bavarian Prime Minister Gunter Beckstein called Sunday for a dialogue with the Czech government to resolve outstanding issues related to the expulsion of ethnic Germans from Czechoslovakia at the end of World War II. For this to happen, Prague had to face up to the chapter of history relating to the expulsions, unquote, he said at a rally of the Sudeten German Association in the Bavarian city of Nuremberg. Quote, concealment will not resolve the problem. A lasting reconciliation is possible only on the basis of the historical truth, unquote, Beckstein said at the gathering attended by around 8,000, mostly elderly ex-Palais. Beckstein shared the view of Sudeten leaders that Prague might be willing to discuss the issue, but said the, quote, difficult conditions of government, unquote, at the moment made a breakthrough unlikely. He said obstacles on the path to reconciliation were the decrees proclaimed by the late President Edvard Beneš that led to the confiscation of German property and the deportation of more than 2 million Sudeten Germans who were accused of being Nazi collaborators. Another impediment was the law that granted immunity from prosecution to those who committed crimes during the expulsion, Beckstein said. Many died in the brutal expulsion, and hundreds of thousands later settled in Germany and Austria, where they and their descendants still live, preserving their dialect and folk customs. Beckstein said one of Bavaria's goals was to strengthen relations with the Czech Republic, with which it shares a common border. Quote, this will not always be easy, but it is a necessary task, unquote, he said. The Czech government, meanwhile, dampened the hopes of the Sudeten Germans for an early dialogue, saying it saw no need for such discussions. Quote, there is no change in our position. If the Sudeten Germans see things differently, it might be linked to a change in their relationship to the Czech Republic, unquote. Foreign Ministry spokesman Zuzana Opletova was quoted as saying by the Czech news agency CTK. Nazi dictator Adolf Hitler forced Czechoslovakia to cede its western Sudetenland region to Germany in 1938, saying German speakers were being persecuted there. Hitler seized the rest of the country in early 1939, ahead of his invasion of Poland in September, which precipitated World War II. After the war, the seized territory was restored to Czechoslovakia, but the post-war expulsions under the Beneš decrees, which have never been repealed, remain a sore point for many Germans. Well, again, the Sudeten Germans were a huge fifth column inside of Czechoslovakia, and many of them were working to actively destabilize the Czech government. And they were, as indicated in that Deutsche Welle article, the pretext for Hitler's first annexation of the Sudetenland and then swallowing up all of Czechoslovakia. And the Volksdeutsche, the German minority in Poland, were a large element of the pretext for Hitler's invasion of Poland triggered by the Gliwice incident. That, by the way, was a provocation set up by the SS and the Gestapo at the border town of Gliwice. A number of concentration camp inmates were dressed up as Polish soldiers and also in SS uniforms. They were then executed, and the Germans intoned about a Polish attack at the border town of Gliwice and said they had been attacked, so therefore they had to retaliate, and they proceeded to jackhammer Poland. We're going to take a look next. And in fact, much of the rest of the broadcast is going to consist of articles from a very important website. That's GermanForeignPolicy.com. We've used it in the past, and we're going to be using it extensively today. The Sudeten Germans are by no means the only Germanic minority and the only member of the Vertrieben, of the Bundesamt für Vertriebene, that are being agitated, on whose behalf the current government of Germany is agitating. So, too, the German minority in Hungary as well. Now, Hungary was an Axis country in World War II. It was dominated by the Nazi-affiliated Arrow Cross organization, and like many other Eastern European fascist movements associated with the Nazis, it too jumped in many ways, certainly many members of it and large elements of it jumped to the United States at the end of World War II, and they too, the Arrow Cross veterans, became a key element of the Republican Party under the Ethnic Outreach Organization, spoken about at length and in detail in a number of broadcasts, including For the Record programs 29, 113, and 465. Next is an article from GermanForeignPolicy.com from November 16th of 2007. This article is titled A Special Relationship, and it's datelined Budapest and Berlin, and it reads, "The Hungarian National Assembly commemorated the post-World War II, quote, disenfranchisement and expulsion of Hungarian Germans, unquote, on November 16th, with the presidents of the German and the European parliaments in attendance. The occasion was a conference on the 60th anniversary of the relocation of the ethnic Germans of Hungary. The conference had been initiated by the Social Democratic President of the Hungarian Parliament, Katalin Zili. She sees the post-war relocation decisions, which were derived from the Potsdam Conference, as documents of shame," unquote. She also rejects the Czech government's Beneš decrees and recently called off a visit to Slovakia because, contrary to Budapest, the parliament in Bratislava did not annul the 1945 relocation decisions. Preceding the November 16th session, the president of the Association of Displaced Persons, the Bund der Vertriebene, or BDV, Erika Steinbach, awarded Schiele with the association's Medal of Honor. Hoping to profit from the annulment of the post-war order, Budapest is cooperating with Berlin, parenthetically I would say again, and just as they did in World War II. Hundreds of thousands of members of the Hungarian-speaking minority in Slovakia are hoping for reparations and restitution if the Beneš decrees are abrogated. The German-Hungarian revisionist axis had been forged long before the 1989 upheaval in Eastern Europe and consolidated through government accords between Hungary and Germany. Its offensive against Poland, the Czech Republic, and Slovakia are gaining momentum. That's the German government's, that is to say. Prominent Hungarian and German politicians are taking part in the Hungarian National Assembly's commemoration conference on the 60th anniversary of disenfranchisement and expulsion of Hungarian Germans. Speakers include representatives of the Hungarian Germans, the Minister of the Prime Minister's Office, Peter Kiss, and the Minority Ombudsman of the Hungarian Parliament. The President of the German Bundestag, Norbert Lammert, as well as the President of the European Parliament, Hans-Geert Pottering, will also participate in the conference at the invitation of Ms. Zsili, President of the Hungarian Parliament. In June 2006, at the inauguration of a memorial dedicated to relocated Germans near the Hungarian capital, Katalin Zsili had already made her rejection of the 1945 relocation decisions clear, declaring, quote, "The Germans' disenfranchisement, their expulsion from their mother country, can no longer be treated as a taboo," unquote. Like the relocation of Germans from Poland and Czechoslovakia, the relocation of the Hungarian Germans was part of the European post-war order as decided by the victorious Allied powers. This relocation was stipulated in Chapter 13 of the Potsdam Treaty and, analogous to Prague's Benes decrees, was implemented in Budapest by national provisions. With these relocations, the Allies drew the consequences of not only the German Volksgruppen policy, an ethnic-based fifth column policy for the destabilization of Eastern Europe that had reached its climax in the so-called Sudeten regions, but also of Nazi crimes in the occupied countries with the participation of Hungarians and, quote, Hungarian Germans, unquote. Hungary, which became Germany's ally in the war, annexed part of today's Slovak territory only weeks after the German invasion of Czechoslovakia. Historians estimate that approximately 120,000 of the 470,000 Hungarian Germans, unquote, registered in a 1940 census, fought in the Nazi SS divisions. Bear in mind that the Vertriebene groups are maintained in the post-war period by the SS and successor organizations. Since the 1989 upheaval, Budapest, in contravention to the Potsdam Treaty and the post-war order this treaty established, has been fully complying with the demands of the relocated Germans. Already on March 28, 1990, the Hungarian Parliament alleged that the relocation of Hungarian Germans, unquote, was in violation of the Universal Human Rights Declaration and therefore illegal. 2 years later, 1992, a law was passed granting reparations to the Hungarian Germans, unquote. Even though these reparations were usually granted in the form of coupons, reparation coupons for investing in shares or apartments, the relocated often lost their benefits through shady transactions with their coupons. Still, more than 11 million euros were paid to the Hungarian Germans, unquote, in addition to their shares. In the meantime, the approximately 62,000 Hungarian Germans who are still living today in Hungary enjoy extensive ethnic privileges or minority rights. Since 1995, they have their own political representation and are part of a pan-European network of German-speaking minorities that is instrumental for the German Ministry of the Interior to have influence on the policies of other European nations, GermanForeignPolicy.com reported. In spite of the Germans' enhanced status, Budapest is profiting from the German-Hungarian revisionist policy. If the Benes decrees are abrogated in Slovakia, the Hungarian-speaking minority of approximately 600,000 can hope for reparations and restitution. In the aftermath of World War II, because of Budapest's participation in the breakup of Czechoslovakia alongside the German, the Hungarian minority was expropriated and a proportion relocated. Following an initiative taken by the Slovakian Party of the Hungarian Coalition, or SMK, calling for the abrogation of the Benes decrees, the Parliament in Bratislava reaffirmed on September 20th their inviolability. Hungarian politicians have been up in arms ever since. President Laszlo Szolyom, who in the 1990s had worked with an influential German Volksgruppen specialist, visited the Hungarian minority community in Slovakia and sharply criticized the Benes decrees. The parliamentary president Zsili indignantly renounced a visit to the Slovak capital. Prime Minister Ferenc Gyurcsány threatened that the Benes decrees are, quote, not only in violation of the principles of good neighborly relations, but also in violation of basic EU principles, unquote. Lastly, on demand of an SMK parliamentarian, the Interior Committee of the European Parliament is now taking up the question. Already before the 1989 upheavals, West Germany had enticed Hungary with the prospects of a European revision and won the support for its demands for the relocated as well as for the Hungarian Germans, unquote, who remained in the country. Already in the 1950s, Budapest permitted the founding of a Federation of Hungarian Germans, unquote, and continuously extended its scope of activities. In 1984, the former chairman of the organization of the relocated, the Landsmannschaft of the Germans from Hungary, reported that, quote, injustice of the relocation is becoming a theme of discussions in the Hungarian capital. In 1985, the first Hungarian-German association, Nikolaus Lenau Kulturverein, was founded in Pécs, followed by numerous other ethnic group organizations toward the end of the 1980s. In 1987, Bonn achieved a breakthrough. On October 7th, the governments of the Federal Republic of Germany and Hungary signed a joint declaration that provided for a special program, quote, to promote the German minority and the German language in the Hungarian Republic, unquote. The prospect of Hungarian benefit from the revision contributed in September of 1989 to Hungary's headlong surge to open its borders to Austria, leading to the collapse of the socialist state system. It was not by coincidence that prominent members from the entourage of the relocated associations were on hand with much publicity for the first illegal border crossings. While Budapest quickly complied with all demands of the relocated Germans, the governments of both countries worked on the German-Hungarian Friendship Treaty that was signed in February of 1992. Article 1 declares the goal to be a, quote, close partner-like and in accordance with the special relations enjoyed by the two countries, cooperation at all levels, unquote. Article 2 elevates national minorities, unquote, to natural bridges between the peoples, unquote. Article 19 explicitly defines the special rights to be enjoyed by the Hungarian Germans. Only a few months later, in September of 92, this paragraph was made more precise through a joint declaration of the two governments, quote, concerning the demands of the German minority. With the President of the European Parliament's participation in the commemoration conference, unquote, in Budapest, the EU was being implicated in the German-Hungarian revision attempts at a time when Berlin is taking the offensive in its attempts to erect a center against expulsions, unquote. The attacks are being accompanied by the edification of a European-wide relocation association that is to be presented to the public at the beginning of December. Italian organizations are playing an important role in this effort. While the EU is progressively drawing closer together to be better able to globally compete, inside the Union, a revisionist alliance is congealing, comprised of the losers of World War II. This provides a glimpse at the internal structures and the hegemonic hub of a future world power. A couple of weeks ago, by the way, and for the record, 633, we took a look at, once again, the return to power of the Italian fascists under the Berlusconi/Unfranco-Fini-Alleanza-Nazionale coalition. In this article, we've been taking a look at Germany and Hungary, both members of the Axis in World War II, actively working on behalf of the German minority in Hungary, many of whom fought in the SS divisions in World War II, and also on behalf of the Czech-Hungarian minority, which also was one major focal point of Axis agitation. Long story made short, what we are looking at is a classic application of von Clausewitzian doctrine that not only is war the continuation of politics by other means, but politics is the continuation of war by other means, and we are looking at the Federal Republic of Germany and Hungary and elements, as we will see, of the U.S. State Department basically implementing Nazi policy, although the State Department in the U.S. is basically applying Volksgruppenrechte, or the rights of native peoples, unquote, in Asia, specifically in China. But this is a continuation of the foreign policy of World War II. Now, by the way, if much of the text that I just read seems too dense for listeners, and I can appreciate that that's kind of a stiff dose of medicine. Bear in mind that For the Record is a hybrid form of broadcasting. It's not only meant to be listened to, it's meant to be read, and now, happily, thanks to the internet, just that can be done. Do not overlook in that regard not only the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com with its vast amount of printed information, including long article-length descriptions of the broadcasts, but do not fail to overlook the For the Record blog section and the For the Record supplemental sections with many of these articles reproduced in their entirety. For some background on the pre-World War II and early World War II agitation, actually pre-World War II agitation in Eastern Europe. Check out all of the books on the Spitfire website, the remarkable old anti-fascist books available for download for free. Armies of Spies, published in 1939 by Joseph Gollum, will give you a real good rundown of just how this agitation took place. And also, please do download and read Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, by the late heroic Paul Manning. Republishing that book just might wind up costing me my life. Not to be melodramatic, but it's a realistic possibility. Reading it is the least you can do, and I mean that quite literally, so please do that. What we're going to look at next in the second side of the broadcast is an article which is going to serve as something of a jumping point from the first two articles about the current agitation on behalf of the U.S. By the government of Germany on behalf of the Germanic minorities that were championed by the Nazis and that were the pretext of Nazi aggression in Eastern Europe. We're going to take a look next at the Association for Threatened Peoples, the Gesellschaft für bedrohte Völker, which is very much like the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples Organization headed up by Karl von Habsburg. That's Citizen von Habsburg, the heir to the House of Habsburg of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, who's married to his charming wife, Francesca Thyssen-Bornemisza. And we looked at that at great length in the For the Record series dealing with not only the Dalai Lama, who's been an underground, a Third Reich collaborator since 1942 when he was just a little llama, and right on up through the underground Reich period, the Dalai Lama, this god king, this icon of spiritual evolution, prays daily to a Mongolian war god. He is, in point of fact, the exact opposite of what he represents himself as being. As I theorized about, he recently had a session with George Bush and was also awarded a congressional medal. I would have given a lot to have been a fly on the wall behind closed doors and seen what they were talking about. As I said, I think Bush's dialogue with the Dalai Lama might have gone something like this. Your Honor, I'm tired of praying to the Prince of Peace. I want to worship the Wizard of War, and would have asked if he might become privy to how to pray to that Mongolian war god. Certainly he's been sacrificing at that altar, but he hasn't been sacrificing his kids. He's been sacrificing everybody else's. But then that has long been the Bush family's shtick, so to speak. The Bush family among the earliest collaborators of the Third Reich. George Herbert Walker, the grandfather of the current president, was the great-grandfather of the current president, was a supporter of Adolf Hitler in 1924. A lot of people are picking up on that, but they're not picking up on the Bormann Group or the Underground Reich or the fact that the Reagan and Bush administrations are all manifestations of a Third Reich going underground, a Third Reich that has been in ascendance over the United States of America since November 22, 1963. But more about that in Side 2. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program number 635, Going Native, Part 4. This is being recorded on May 26th of 2008. Happy Memorial Day.